again, Bob Chaundy here with another Considering Art podcast, in which I talk to an artist about their work and something of their life. Adwa Aparicio is a Spanish multidisciplinary artist who moved to London to study at the Royal College of Art 15 years ago. Her background is in engineering and design, and she researches industrial processes to see how she can bring them into her studio. Adwa has just won the prestigious Ralph Saltzman Prize, awarded to young design talent. In the words of its founder, Adwa's deft handling of a range of materials results in a visually arresting portfolio of work with sustainability and tactility at its heart. Adwa's managed a way of fusing glass and ceramics together using a substance called borosilicate glass, a type that's normally used for making lab equipment and solar panels. It's often the waste product of glass blowers because its chemical composition makes it unsuitable for recycling. So, using this, she creates sparkling, self-glazing ceramics. Many of these are featured in an exhibition at the Design Museum in London, which is part of her prize. I spoke to Adwa in her London studio, which she shares with her partner, glassblower Jochen Holtz. Adwa, welcome to the podcast, and first of all, congratulations for winning the Ralph Saltzman's Prize.
Thank you so much.
That must mean a lot to you?
Yes, no, it's amazing. It came not totally unexpected because I was nominated, but still quite unexpected, and it's been really good so far, and I'm excited to see what comes.
And you've got an exhibition at the Design Museum.
Yeah, that's right. So I have a display at the Design Museum until the 15th of April, which is free and anyone can go and see.
Now tell me, you're from Spain. Which part of Spain are you from?
I'm from the 2 hours north of Madrid.
Now, your parents, I know, were doctors, but I believe that they had some skills in making.
Yes, they both like making and working with their hands. They still do. Especially when we were kids, they were very into restoring old furniture, and every night they will turn the kitchen into their workshop. I'm used to going to bed with these soundings of, like, sanding or...
Or soaring, or...
Yes.
So you have acquired some of their skills in making, then?
I guess you lose the fear to make when you see people making as you grow up.
Now, you studied design and engineering, didn't you, in Spain, in Madrid, and then Valencia. Were there many women doing that skill at the time?
In Madrid, I did industrial design engineering, and we were about 40 in my class, and there was like 4 women, so like about 10%, so not very many. And then in Valencia, it was more like product, toy, and vehicle design, and there was more women. It was more balanced, I will say.
And what sort of things were you learning?
In the first education, in the industrial design, it was much more... Industrial, like we will have to do technical drawings for a sprinkler system or designing a turbo for a car or things like that. And when I went to Valencia, so after I finished in Madrid, I was like, there must be something more to design than this. I was curious, so I went to Valencia for this postgraduate for 1 year, and there the teachers were design practitioners that were designing furniture and toys and graphic design, so I found it much more interesting. And in that university there was a workshop, and we had to not just design but make models or prototypes to the things that we were proposing, so that was really what got me interesting in this way of working.
And you came to the Royal College of Art. What made you come to the UK?
So I came to the RCA because all my favorite tutors in Valencia, they were all studying they have studied previously in the RCA. So that's how I found about the RCA and what got me thinking like that I want once I would like to go there. So after I graduated in Valencia, I think I spent like 5 years or so in Spain working and doing internships and different things before I went to the RCA.
And while you were at the RCA, you actually founded the Silo Studio, didn't you, with Oscar Lessing. What was the reason for that?
So that was during the second year at the RCA. Both, I did a project together with Oscar. The projects were like independent, but at the there was this one project at the beginning of the year where we could like work in groups, and then me and Oscar used to be good friends and or still are good friends, and were sitting next to each other, and then we started working on this project, looking at textiles to make molds, and that's how we started working. We got very excited. We just spent all our time working together and neglected our personal projects, and that's how we end up founding Silo Studio.
A theme that runs through your pieces today is sustainability. Has that always been something close to your heart?
I think it's always been something close to my heart, but like for the last few years, I've been trying to be more responsible with the choices I make and try to limit the materials that I use. For the last 5 years, I've been working with combining ceramics with waste borosilicate glass, and that was a conscious choice when I was searching for more sustainable materials to incorporate into my practice.
And does that sustainability also include the way you fire things in the kilns and so on?
Also, since I did a residency in China in 2019, before COVID, luckily, and there I found that they only fire things once. I don't have like a ceramic background, so I didn't... You always end up doing things the way you see them being done. But there in China, I realized that they fire their pieces only once. So since then, I've been like doing that. I like this because in the ceramic field, the firing is the part that is more carbon intensive and energy intensive. So I try to reduce that to the minimum.
Now, you mentioned borosilicate glass. Where did the idea for using that come from?
So that came because I used to share my studio with Jochen Holtz, which is a glass blower, and he works with borosilicate glass. And the special thing of this glass is like the scientific glass, and it has a different composition to window glass or bottle glass. And because of that that boro in it, if you will recycle it, it will contaminate the whole skip. So it's better to, he will just throw it to the normal bin. And that got me thinking, like, how can I use this? Because I just had kind of access to his waste, and it came in all these beautiful colors. And I had this small knowledge from ceramics that glaze and glass are the same thing. So I thought maybe I can make a glaze with it. But yeah, and that's how I started working with borosilicate glass, thinking... So first, I wanted to do something with borosilicate, and I knew that borosilicate needs heat to be molded or transformed, and I thought ceramics also need heat, so I thought maybe I can combine them together.
But the problem, I believe, is that their melting points are different, so that glass just becomes like liquid water in the kiln.
That's why, like, when I told people, friends that work with ceramics, what I wanted to do with glass, they were like, no, it's going to make a mess in the kiln, it will melt, it sticks. So bottle glass, when you fire it in the kiln, it becomes very liquid. And because the melting point is more about 500-600 degrees, but borosilicate glass, it has a much higher melting point and also a lower expansion coefficient, a bit of technical things here. So that's how much the material kind of expands and contract with heat. And borosilicate glass has a very low expansion coefficient, much more close to the ceramics. So that's how I, for example, in some of the pieces that I made, I have either an already existing porcelain plate, or sometimes I make ceramic slabs and I fire glass on top. And then the glass stays where I put it, so it doesn't become liquid. It keeps the, like, about 5 millimeters thickness instead of becoming like a self-leveling compound. So it stays where it is, and it doesn't crack. The surface is continuous, so it has a more surface tension, I guess.
Did it take you a long time to work all this out, to experiment?
Yes, I'm still experimenting. And also at the beginning I started very slowly, very carefully, adding very, very, very little glass, because when people say, oh, it's not going to work, be careful, then I'm not like a kamikaze and I don't want to ruin anyone's kiln. So I tried very, very little. And then little by little I gained confidence and I started to try different things and I keep trying.
Did you not perfect this in China when you did your residency in the porcelain factories there?
I did quite a lot of development there because I sent my waste glass to China and it got stuck in customs. So in China, one thing I learned, because for like a month I had no glass, but there I had time with no glass to develop hand building skills, which until then I was working all with molds. From China, I took a lot of like hand building skills and also this firing only once.
And you made lots of plates there, didn't you?
Yes, there I worked with like discarded plates from industry, because they had in the ceramic, they had a lot of like discarded plates because they have like a small, maybe little black dot or something wasn't right. And there was like, as you drive around Jindajen, there was a lot of like towers of plates stuck in like 2 meters high stacks of plates.
But all these ones were slight imperfections.
Yeah, all like left outside with some that weren't good enough, so they just left them out. And then I decided to work with them, and I was looking for plates that had some decoration or some signs, so it will tell a story of where they come from. Because most of the plates were white, and so I was going into factories trying to find like plates with some decoration. And also big plates are not so common in China because they eat more from bowls. So finally I found these plates that have like a traditional proverb that is made with 4 Chinese characters. And then I got 100 plates and I put glass on top of them, making, like, drawing with the glass smiley faces, different smiley faces. And, yeah, that's part of the... Some of them are exhibited in the Design Museum.
As a designer and also as an engineer, have you discovered properties of borosilicate glass that perhaps industry hasn't found?
I think it has a great potential to be used in the ceramic industry, especially for glazes. That will be very easy to do. You just need to grind it to a powder and then incorporate it to a glaze. Because the problem with borosilicate glass industry is that borosilicate is a very, very pure form of glass, so they don't want to use recycled content, so they can guarantee that it's very pure. But for other industries where purity is not so important, then they could use it instead of using, like, for example, I developed a glaze that used 67% of borosilicate glass powder, and that will save mining sand from the beaches to get silica. I don't know, I like to look at waste as a raw material. I think that we have to do that, it's important.
Now that you've worked a while now with borosilicate glass, when did you start making objects that were really art objects rather than for practical use?
When I started working with this project, I did a lot of tests in, like, mostly as a tile form or like a biscuit form. So they are, and I had lots and lots of them. So at some point when I went to China, I decided to start working in a different way. So instead of making test tiles, making pieces that where I test things, and then in these pieces I wasn't thinking about the function, so they became much more free, and that's when I started realizing of the potential of making pieces that are more like decorative or pieces on their own sake.
Well, let's look at some of those then. There's one that caught my eye, which you call Solaris de Escriva. First of all, what's the title?
So Solaris de Esgueva is a collaboration piece that I did with my sister Saelia. Esgueva is the river that passes through my grandmother's village, which is called Villaco de Esgueva. It's a very small village with 150 people. My dad was also born there, and we used to go there in summers and spend time in nature and playing around, being on our own for the whole day, which was great. And in this, it's like a bookshelf. Yeah, it's a bookshelf made with like a ceramic totem. And then it has the shelves are made of wood. And my sister illustrated the shelves to kind of mimic the texture of the ceramic. And in between the texture of the ceramic, she embedded drawings that represent shared memories from our childhood.
I should add that your sister is an artist.
Yeah, my sister is an artist that does sculpture and drawing.
And does she collaborate a lot with you?
We help each other out a lot. We collaborated in the past and still now. Yeah, and we like working together.
And tell me about some of the illustrations she made on this piece.
There was one that is kind of like a tragic memory, that with a bird, there is a bird held in two hands, and that's a quite a sad memory of we found when we must have been like less than 10 or around 10, but we found a bird on the ground on a freshly, I don't know if it was freshly tarmac or it was very summer, very, very hot, and the tarmac became hot. So the little bird got stuck into the tarmac, and then we couldn't get it out. This animal was going to die, and we understand it straight away, because it's like, if you pull, you are going to rip it apart. But what do? You let it die there. It was like a sad memory. Then there was also some sheep, because this what they do in this village is like agriculture, mainly cereal, and also sheep. And they have, so there was like this small sheep drawn in there as well, because there is also, like, there is always like lots and lots of sheep everywhere with the scary shepherd dogs, but the sheep were nice.
And I believe there's a rabbit in there as well.
Ah, the rabbit, that's a very nice story. My grandma's house that was built in 1840s, maybe, something like that, and they used to have like, the house has a patio, like courtyard, and in there, when my grandma was a very small kid, they had rabbits outside because they as a food to eat them. And one day the rabbit make oars to breed, and one day at the entrance of the rabbit oar they found a golden coin, and then from the Napoleonic time, so it was a French coin
when they invaded Spain.
So then they were just like, they got all excited and they start digging, following the rabbit ore. And at the end, they found a ceramic jar with, I don't know if it was 17 or like a few gold coins.
Oh, well, did they keep them?
They kept them, and I think my auntie still has some.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they kind of divide them in the family, and then at the end, they get like, all gets a bit.
Oh, that's a lovely...
And people probably, they will take them to the dentist when you need to get a cold filling done or things like that.
I believe that your sister also illustrated a toad on your piece.
Yeah, one of our favorite activities to do was to go into the relict buildings, because also we weren't allowed to, of course. And towards the end of the village, there was this derelict building. There they built with adobe bricks, so when the house collapsed, it kind of it gets like reabsorbed by the soil, which is it's very nice. It doesn't feel like too dirty or too scary. But recently there must have rained, and it was like the ground floor was missing, so it was like the cellar was all of the sign exposed, and it was like a bit paddly there, and inside there was a big toad. And I just went and took it, because I've never been scared of reptiles. So I went and took it, and I remember it filled my both hands. It was like a big, big toad. It was so peaceful and cold, and it just wasn't doing much. It was just there. And we walked through the village to saw my grandma. Everyone in the village was looking at us like if we were weirdos. Because there is always this, a bit of a, when you are not... You live in the city, and then you come to the village, so everyone is a bit like, you are a bit like an outsider. And then when I arrived and saw my grandma was horrified, because there is always these fears of reptiles, and they thought it might be poison or something, but so they asked me to put it back where I found it, and that's what
Oh, that was a bit disappointing.
Yeah, but...
Another one of your pieces is called Jardiniere, as a planter, and it has that same digital texture that you've been speaking about, isn't it? But instead of you using coloured glazes, you've baked the colour in, haven't you, by using different coloured clays. That's quite novel, isn't it?
Yeah, I like working in that way. For Jardiniere, I use like different color clays, and I build it with coils, and then with the digi texture, the way I work is it's like coil build, but instead of smoothing the surface, every time I press down to kind of join the top coil to the bottom coil, I just press down and don't touch it anymore, and I continue to the next one, to the next one, to the next one, and that way it kind of freezes this movement in time, and it also allows me to only move forward. And the shape, I don't have total control of the shape. I like that. I like that it becomes very organic, and the piece kind of built itself by me doing the same repetitive movement. And with the colors, I like to introduce color as I'm building the piece, because a lot of times in the ceramic world or in a sculpture in general, you make a piece first and then you apply the color after. But I feel this doesn't work for me. So I find it much more interesting to introduce color as I build, so I can improvise, and I make coils in different colors, and then I start with white, and then I'm like, oh, I'm going to put a bit of terracotta here or there. And I don't try to create a pattern, like control pattern, so it always ends up kind of random. And it also makes me think of weaving. It's a bit more like weaving when you can change color as you build.
Another one you've got is your sprout bench. Mm. Now, you've got flecks of color on it, and that's this borosilicate glass sort of inside, is it?
Yeah, this is another way of that I was trying to kind of glaze a piece. So I hand-build a ceramic piece, and then while the clay is still soft, I take pieces of glass that are about the size of a nail or something like that, like a hand nail from a finger, and then press them inside the clay so the clay kind of holds the glass. And then when I fire the piece, the glass melts and creates kind of drops all over the piece, and it leaves the imprint from where the glass was pressed into the clay. And in the sprout bench, I did that, but then also I apply glaze all over it, so instead of creating drops, it creates more like bursts of color in the surface of the piece.
Mm. And you have a series of wall-mounted sculptures, don't you? I think you call them your A Love J series. You develop these textiles in the Netherlands.
A Love J is the collaboration with Jochen, and this is hand-built pieces with neon and lights. So the wall pieces don't have a name as a group. The wall pieces I just call them wall pieces, and then I name each one individually.
And how does the neon light work?
The neon light are made by Jochen, and they are like experimental oversized neons, and he works with different color glass. Normal neons, the tubes are much thinner, and they are often coated in the inside with like a phosphor powder, and that way you can achieve many colors of neons. But what he does is like he works with different color glass, and then the gas, it can be either helium, neon, or argon. So helium is pink, neon is red, and argon is blue. So it's only this. But that way you can really see through the neon. You see how it's kind of like a glowing cloud inside the glass. And when the neon is turned off, you just see the glass.
So you put ceramics over it, do you?
No, it's like first I make the ceramic piece, because for him it's much easier to adapt to an already existing piece, to be precise. So I make the piece, like thinking to leave in a space for the electrodes, because neons is like a tube, and at either end they have an electrode, which is about 10 centimeters long, and from the electrode you connect it to a transformer, and the transformer runs electricity through the electrodes, and when the gas is exposed to electricity, it gets excited, and then the gas glows.
No, it's very adventurous and very ingenious.
Yeah, I mean, neon is amazing. I still can't get my head around it that gas can glow. It's like,
yeah. Yeah. Are you working on any particular experiments now?
So at the moment I'm working with an upholsterer and I'm looking at how to combine ceramic pieces with textiles.
Oh, right.
Or some kind of soft materials, either textiles or leather. Because I draw a lot of inspiration from textile techniques into my work, especially lately. Like, I've done a series of wall-hanging pieces in the Netherlands with different colored clays and also mixing clay with glass inside. And these draw a lot of inspiration from textiles. They're all like threads and weaving clay and...
Yeah. And what can we expect to see in the Design Museum exhibition?
For me, it's all part of the same project, but five different bodies of work with inside this combining borosilicate glass with ceramics. There is like 12 expressive proverbs plates, which are the ones with the discarded plates with the smiley faces on top. Then there are also the digit texture series. There is three vases that I made in China that are made with porcelain, and then that's when I didn't have access to glass, so they are just porcelain, and then I apply a glaze with glass mixed into the glaze, and so you get like for example, there is one that is lilac glaze with a lot of speckles of different colors, so all the speckles come from glass added into the glaze. Then there is the A Loves J light sculpture, which is a hand-built ceramic piece, also glazed with glass powder into the, so with a self-made glaze, and it has neon, like one neon tube and four light bulbs that we also made ourselves, like self-made light bulbs.
So it's quite a cross-section of your work.
Yes. And then there is also the Solaris Desgreba, which is a bookshelf with this...
That's the one
texture.
We talked about, yeah.
Yeah. And then there is two pieces that I made in my latest residency in the EKWC. They are both wall-mounted. One is the ones that I was saying that is like a slab with like different color clays pressed into it. And the other one is more 3D. It's like a coil of ceramic rolled into glass and then like hang over a ring of porcelain.
Right, well, we'll look forward to seeing that. Atwa, thanks so much for talking about your work.
Thank you. Thank you for coming all the way to interview me.
The resourceful and creative Atwa Aparicio there. Thanks for listening. Join me, Bob Chaundy, again next week.